Football Weekly.
Football in crisis. Man United ask where their next shirt sponsor is coming from. Liverpool's stadium switches off as Church Hall is busy on Saturdays. And traditional podcast opening is hit after crisis with all things derivative. Yes, it is a special Football in Crisis edition of Football Weekly Extra. On our agenda, Champions League, an unexpectedly interesting first round with Chelsea and Cluj, those early front runners. Refs in crisis, John Terry below the belt but above the law. Sid in Madrid, plus the Premier League. The usual frank and fearless preview of the weekend and beyond. What'll happen between Chelsea and Man United? The latest from tottering Tottenham. And are Newcastle really about to sign Alan Gerbishley? All that in Football Weekly Extra. Good. And on board the Football Weekly Extra pod today, hello, Sean Ingle.
Hello, James. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, friend.
Is there any truth to the rumour that you started the global credit crunch by removing your investments for August, the back end of Sunday?
Nothing like a bit of banter at the start of the pod, is there?
Just fantastic. Asking.
No truth to that at all. Tom Lutz.
Hello, I've got no banter.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Probably just as well, because we've got an awful lot to talk about.
Exactly.
Yeah. And Barry?
Hello, come on, let's move on.
Let's move on, eh? Champions League. There we were on Monday. You were saying how little interest there was in these opening games, but how wrong you proved to be. Some fascinating results. I have to say, Man United against Villarreal wasn't necessarily one of them. Your hand is already up.
There was one interesting result.
It was the Cluj game.
Yes.
Which you...
One interesting result out of how many games?
16. Werder and...
There were some other interesting results too, but you want to talk about Cluj, don't you?
Well, I don't particularly. I back Cluj to win, so I'm very happy they won.
How did you know?
I just had a feeling. Roma haven't been playing well, admittedly, this early into the Serie A season. And I thought Cluj would be well up for it, what with it being their first game ever in the Champions League proper.
Well, you proved right.
Yes, they were 14-1 to win that match. So it was worth...
respect to you,
it was
Barry.
Worth £7.50 of anyone's money.
Mm. A 2-1 victory for the Romanian New Boys, their first ever game in the Champions League. Could have been 3-1, really, because there was a delicious little... chip that bounced back over the bounced back off the bar, rather. Juan Culio, careful how you say that one, with a brace, and Roma in all sorts of problems. The Italian press have gone, as you can might imagine, to town on this one, particularly because the Cluj manager is a guy called Maurizio Trombetta, an Italian, who bizarrely, this was only his second game ever in charge of Cluj, and he goes to the Stadio Olimpico in Rome and wins. It was only his second professional game as a manager ever, because he had been coaching down in the Eccellenza amateur division in Italy. So there you go. Remarkable stuff. Yeah.
Do you know how he ended up in Romania?
Yeah, I scoured the papers for reports on that, but there was no indication at all. But there you
go. My uncle Luigi has recently bought land in Romania, and you know he's making a fortune on his investments. And I think he says a lot of Italians that go in that way. So maybe,
right.
Maybe that's one way.
There must be a connection there. Templeton the Rat says AC Jimbo is Luciano Spalletti in danger of walking the plank after this loss to Cluj, which as Barry points out comes so. Were hard on the heels of that 3-1 thrashing at Palermo and the disappointing home draw with Napoli. However, also in that group, Chelsea and a very, very impressive 4-0 defeat of Bordeaux. Should we begin our Premier League teams with the Blues?
Well, Chelsea won 4-0. Their manager was not one bit happy with the result. He thought they should have won by more. He thought they made too many mistakes. Bordeaux were absolutely hopeless, like most French teams, apart from Lyon, who are at least able to give some sides in Europe a game, but the rest of the French sides are all rubbish.
Well, Chelsea hugely impressive in that match. We'll talk more about them, though, later on, vis-a-vis their big Premier League clash with Man United. Elsewhere, Arsenal, Tom Lutz, a 1-1 draw away to Dynamo Kiev. Were they hard done by the Gunners?
No, it was a mixed performance from them. They started off really well. First half, they should have been 2-0 up at least. And then in the second half, early part of the second half, Kiev kind of out-Arsenaled Arsenal, played some beautiful football, lovely flowing moves, and they deserved to go up. And then in the end, Arsenal's equaliser actually came from kind of good old-fashioned pressure. They just parked themselves on the edge of the Kiev area and finally forced a chance. I think Kiev, that wonderful spell out at the beginning of the second half, they kind of exhausted themselves and they just lost concentration for the Arsenal equaliser. Two or three players could have put it in. But it was also interesting to see Walcott get lumps kicked out of him. I don't know if this is the treatment he's going to get whenever he goes abroad.
Yeah. Now, and a home and away, I think, is now the
forecast for Walcott.
And is he going to end up like Michael Owen, kind of half crippled at the age of 27 or 28?
Any fast winger is going to get lumps kicked out of him. It's an occupational hazard. So if you don't like it, don't be a fast winger. Play somewhere else.
Right. Well, he'll be playing in central defence from now.
Excellent. Let's see. Elsewhere in the group, Porto beating Fenerbahce with that man Aragonés 3-1. A good start for them. Barry, meanwhile, you did Olympic Marseille-Liverpool in the minute-by-minute, didn't you?
Yes.
Were you impressed, were you? Steven Gerrard?
Yeah, very impressive. He got a wonderful goal. His equaliser was fantastic. And not just the manner in which he chipped the keeper and placed the ball in the corner, but he did it so quickly as well, without appearing
without
to think
about
it. Without
even looking as well. Yeah. That was a bizarre thing.
So, I mean, hats off to him for that. That was a marvellous goal. He kept his composure to show John Terry how penalties should be taken. Scored the first one off the post. He hit the post and went the right way. And when it had to be retaken because Dirk Kuyt encroached, he just slotted it in the same place again. So, but again, Marseille played quite well, but their manager said he was furious because they wasted so many chances. But I just think this is symptomatic of French teams in Europe. They're useless. It's not necessarily their fault because most the French league is full of youngsters, and as soon as they make a name for themselves, they go off somewhere else. But they're just very, very weak.
Indeed. So also in that group, rather less good news for Liverpool here is the fantastic start by Atletico Madrid with that 3-1 win, I think it was, at PSV. We'll hear more about that later on. But also Man United, the Villarreal game, wasn't the most entertaining. United, they had one off the post, one cleared off the line. The best chance, though, went to Villarreal when I don't know who the striker was.
Franco hit the ball. Well, I think Johnny
Evans
It
was just bizarre, because all he had to do was just tap it in, but instead he decides to spin and try and backheel it.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I think Johnny Evans had a great chance.
Well, he did.
I didn't think it was that bad a game. Admittedly, I had quite a lot of money on there being under two goals, so I was, every time the ball went near the net, I was slightly panicking. But I thought it was an all right early season game. Both teams weren't the strongest they could have put out. And, it wasn't that bad. I'm amazed how negative it's been. If United had got one of those couple of penalties in the first half, if they had put away one of their many 20 chances, I think they had, or shots on goal, people wouldn't have been so negative about this performance. I think it was a better performance than against Roma when they won 1-0 at this stage last season.
Right. Fans of the Follicle Challenge will be interested to know that we just have confirmation Ray Wilkins has taken over from Steve Clarke.
You've shared many. Sometimes I confused you and him.
Yeah.
When you were sitting on the Serie A Gazzetta Italia couch.
I understand terms of his agreement. If he's busy on a Sunday with other engagements, I'll just take his place in the tracksuit, and no one will be any the wiser.
But he's a nice bloke, Ray, isn't he?
He certainly is.
Nicest man in football?
Well, he's a little bit professionally the nicest man in football. I have never seen anything in personal terms that leads me to imagine that he's not like that underneath.
Do you think he'd be a good coach? Will players listen to him?
Whatnot? Well, I don't know. How does somebody who knows more about football than I do will be able to tell me? I know as a manager it didn't work out for him, possibly because he is the nicest man in football. But the coaching role, the role that he's taking over there in place of Steve Clarke, it's more of the middleman. No, it's more the good cop to the...
Partly that, and partly also that he will be running the training sessions. And my fear is slight that he may have been out of the game for a while now, and he may not.
Well, you'll
be
relieved to know that I've been working with him on Top African Station GTV, where he's been able to keep a close eye on goings on, not just in the Premier League but also abroad.
Anyway, can we go back to Manchester United?
All right, Manchester United. You want to talk about Barry?
Well,
the applause for Ronaldo.
It was just embarrassing. I mean, Manchester United fans at Old Trafford last night, Ronaldo must think they're the greatest shower of idiots that have ever set foot in the ground. You know, is it any wonder so many players like him are preening around with, or strutting with such preening self-regard, when they can court another club, spend the entire summer courting another club, whoring themselves out, and then when they don't get sold, come back and they get applauded, cheered, get their name sung. Would these fans, if they went home and found their wife in bed with another man, would they go down and make her a cup of tea? I mean, they're just morons.
Or rather, when the other man then runs off because he wasn't that into it after all, would they then welcome back wife with open arms?
Or,
You know, let's go further with this metaphor.
No, no, we'll continue this analogy further. It's like, you know, United know they need Ronaldo. Just right. Like, you know, it's like a man needing his wife and perhaps accepting, yeah, well, you know, maybe she might, you know, play away from home now and again, but she's still, you know, there and I need her.
But my opinion of those Manchester United fans just plummeted. I mean,
but it was pretty high in the first place. So.
But without Ronaldo, United are probably not going to win the league, probably not going to win the Champions League. With them, they've got a good chance. Why not? They make a
Where's
rational
the dignity?
Decision.
They've no dignity.
But, yeah, but football lost its dignity years ago. Football is a nasty, seething, slightly corrupt, slightly... No one cares about anyone else. It's all about, you know, you're out for your own, and people are just making a rational decision that, you know, better to have Ronaldo than not.
What must he think of them? He must think they're complete moppets.
Dyspeptic view you're taking there.
He won't, though, but Ronaldo is so in love with himself and his genius, he will think, well, of course they're going to love me.
Also in the group, Celtic Aalborg, the Strachan Rioch clash, Celtic managing not to win an eminently winnable game.
Two bald men fighting over a comb, I think. United and Villarreal go through.
Right. Eerie silence after that analogy.
I actually think that Celtic result was probably the worst result any team got in the whole competition.
With the exception of Roma?
Well, I don't know. Roma will probably recover. Celtic may not because their away record is so bad. I mean, don't forget, Liverpool got 1 point in their first three Champions League games last season and still made it to the semi-final, didn't they? So it's just a measure of how bloated and cash-obsessed the competition has become that so many games can be irrelevant. So
right.
It doesn't really matter if you lose your first game. Even if you lose your second game, you can still get through.
Fair point indeed. Well, coming up shortly on Bloated and Cash Obsessed Sport Weekly Extra, we're going to be looking at one or two more games from the Champions League, but just one or two, and hearing from Sid Lowe in Spain.
Football Weekly Extra on guardian.co.uk.
Joining us now on the line from Madrid, I'm guessing, is Sid Lowe. Sid, where about?
Hello, James. How are you?
You're out in the street, aren't you?
No, I'm down in the metro, actually, so I'm very close to being literally on the line.
Wow. OK, we're priority one for Sid Lowe. Sid, in the Champions League, Group of Death, Group H, Real Madrid strolled to a 2-0 victory against Bate, but they were still whistled by their own fans. Why, Sid, why?
As everybody knows, talking about the team with the worst UEFA ranking ever to play in the Champions League that's based out of a tractor factory originally. Their players spent the day before the game strolling around El Corte Inglés, which is kind of like the Spanish version, I suppose, of Selfridges, and wandering around local parks and just doing some sightseeing. So I think Real Madrid were expected to rack up a bit of a cricket score. So it wasn't seen as a particularly worthwhile performance from them, and they really didn't play very well either.
Also in that group, Juve back after 2 years with a win over Zenit, a stunning free kick from Alessandro Del Piero, the 33-year-old, surprising us still further, by performing a full somersault in celebration. However, back to the Spanish stuff, Barcelona beat Sporting Lisbon 3-1 at the Nou Camp. Was that better?
It was a little bit better, and there's a feeling that the most important thing for Barcelona was that they started scoring the goals that they just haven't scored. I mean, you know, they've gone three games without scoring. The last two league games, they'd racked up almost 60 shots and only managed to score one, which was a penalty. So they still hadn't scored a goal from open play. And that was the thing everyone was really most concerned about. So in that sense, it's important that they did score three times. But then there's still a feeling that they're just not quite, you know, they're not quite adding the goals that their football perhaps deserves, or at least that their football suggests they should. And one headline, I think, summed it up, really, which was, the phrase is much sharper in Spanish, this will sound like a pretty rubbish headline in English, which was basically, Barcelona's football could do without the goalposts. You know, they're a team that do everything else except put the ball in the net. Now, all right, so they scored three goals against Sporting, but there's a feeling that Real Madrid absolutely hammered them in a pre-season match. There's a feeling that Sporting, first of all, aren't very good. And secondly, you look at Barca's three goals, and two of the three, again, are dead balls. One's a corner that Marquez heads in, and one's a penalty, and a really ropey penalty as well, which Samuel Eto'o scored. So it hasn't entirely won them over. It hasn't entirely convinced them that everything's okay, but you get the feeling that one day Barca are going to get it right and they're going to beat them in 25-0.
Well, I look forward to that. First win, of course, for Pep Guardiola on the Barcelona bench. Very interesting, meanwhile, the situation with Atletico Madrid back in the Champions League with a 3-0 victory at PSV Eindhoven. Not an easy result, that one, to get.
And a brilliant result. I mean, a really, really great start for them. They're obviously, you can imagine everyone's going absolutely crazy. And I think as well, what it really did, perhaps from a non-Spanish perspective, as much as anything else, is underline something that those who didn't realise it surely now are going to start realising that Sergio Aguero is going to be one hell of a footballer.
Indeed so. Almost as good probably as his son's going to be, if it is a boy. Is it a boy? Do we know?
I'm not sure if we do know, to be perfectly honest with you, but it's certainly not got bad sireship, I suppose, for want of a better phrase. It has been studied by two quite impressive thoroughbred studs, with Diego Maradona being the father-in-law and Kun Agüero being the father. It's not bad, is it?
The grandfather-in-law.
The grandfather-in-law, right, isn't it? Yeah. That would be extremely freaky.
Yeah, it would.
I mean, I suspect the kid won't be very tall.
Finally, Sid, because I don't want to make you miss your train and that. But
it's all right, I've missed two or three already. But
have you?
It's a metro, so there'll be another one along in a minute.
Wow, that's so impressive.
They're like buses.
Metros.
Metros are like buses. Yeah,
it's not that impressive, Jimbo. You get on Victoria Line, they come along every minute or two.
Yeah, I mean, James has never been on a metro.
He's always on the taxi, yeah. Or horse-drawn cart sometimes.
I have seen James Richardson on a public transport in Vienna.
Vienna.
A segway, no less. did you have a colossal ice cream at the time, and how did you manage to balance that while you were also trying to hold onto the segway?
Yeah, I'm a multitasker, Sid.
He had someone to ride along beside him holding his ice cream for him.
Sid, that's brilliant. Enjoy your public transport experience, and we look forward to speaking to you on Monday.
Yeah, good stuff. Speak to them.
Thanks, Sid.
Bye-bye.
Ta-ra, bye indeed. One or two other little bits and bobs from Europe's premier club competition in Group B. And North is Famagusta. The other Champions League new boys earned a 0-0 draw at Werder Bremen, largely thanks to the efforts of Claudio Pizarro, who was absolutely appalling. Don't know if you caught any of the inverted commas highlights of that. In the same group, Inter Milan got a handy 2-0 victory away at Greek outfit Panathinaikos, which is good for Inter because they usually lose their opening game. But now they've got Jose Mourinho on board, and he's been hailed as a master worker for his work regenerating.
Is that by himself or someone else?
Now, the Italian press are enjoying a bit of a kind of bipolar relationship with Mourinho, at times calling him deeply arrogant. And I think we talked about the fact that somebody suggested he gets smashed in the face, Pietro Lomonaco, the Catania director, last weekend. But at other times, just simply delighted that he's turned up to give a bit of a boost to Serie A's credibility. But anyway, Mancini and Adriano scoring. But the real story there was Ibrahimovic, who was brilliant. Don't know if you saw his work for the first goal, did you? Beating three men, just basically muscling them off the ball. A combination of finesse and physique, I think, really. And
Is there a feeling in Italy that Inter could do something this season, get to the knockout stages again and lose
there
to
always
Liverpool?
Is, there always is. And Mourinho's there specifically to make sure that doesn't happen. But so I think, you know, when you look at the squad, there's all the ingredients there for a credible challenge. But they're well aware that in financial terms, they are some distance behind the Premier League now. Although they outspent everybody else except for the Premier League over the summer. So in some ways, they've caught up a bit with the Spanish. Other results, well, Fiorentina had a 2-2 draw away to Lyon, which kind of backs up what you were saying. They were 2-0 up. Lyon got back into the game with a very controversial goal after they used a player who was down on the ground clutching his face, which he'd been elbowed in, as the means of beating the offside trap, and made it 2-1, and then a free kick and that man Benzema equalising. Juve in the group of death. Oh, yeah, we talked about that. Good. Equalising. That's it for Champions League. Very shortly, we'll move on to other things, the John Terry issue and posts and all that. Just quickly to mention the UEFA Cup, one or two interesting
That's quick enough.
There.
I don't think there are one or two interesting fixtures.
I just wanted to
name them.
Napoli returning to the UEFA Cup is great. They were in the third division only 4 years ago. Well done to Napoli. And they're playing Benfica tonight. And Milan, who are in all sorts of trouble, are taking on Zurich. Ronaldinho and Shevchenko have apparently been dropped for that game. So,
but Rangers got to the final of the UEFA Cup last season.
Yeah,
that tells you all you need to know about that competition.
Fair point, Barry. Post, on the subject of John Terry, Snappy says, can you only get sent off these days if there are none of your teammates between you and your goalie? I think Terry is a dirty... that was properly cheating. He shouldn't be the country's captain. You wouldn't see Bobby Moore behaving like that, even if he'd had a skinful. Odd Division 4 agrees. Terry appears to have the same immunity that Shearer had when he kicked Neil Lennon in the head. Do I not also remember, ask Old Division 4, Graham Pohl had to retire because the FA wouldn't back him up when John Terry made outlandish claims that weren't backed up by the recordings. Aston Manila also weighing in here, but he's wondering, since the motivation for his red card was apparently serious foul play, was it that was the challenge not sufficiently brutal? Is that what the problem was? And is that why he was let off the suspension? Guys, John Terry, I know Barry, you've got a lot to say about this.
Well, he got sent off. I thought he was correctly sent off, for he made no attempt to play the ball. He rugby tackled an opponent. That's serious foul play, which is a red card offence. End of story. The card has since been rescinded. the referee who sent him off, Mark Halsey, has been relegated to League Two, so obviously been made a scapegoat.
I just think if the Referees Association, who you know, are responsible for looking after all referees, if that's how they react to a perceived slight mistake, send someone down to League Two, it's just humiliating for that referee. How's he going to feel? How are other referees going to feel? If they're going to make a mistake, they're going to make...
He didn't make a mistake. It was a correct decision.
But, I mean, in the eyes of them, he's made a mistake. Mm. And that's how he's treated.
Do you think he made a mistake, Tom?
I don't think it was a red card, but I don't think it should have been taken back because it's so borderline unless it's, you know, absolutely definite.
Well, everyone's been hammering on about the fact that there was another player who probably would have come across.
That's
it wasn't
completely
the last man,
irrelevant.
But when you haul somebody down with a rugby tackle,
that's
if you can't get sent off
play.
For that.
I mean, I think even Chelsea were quite surprised that the card was
received. Scolari said he was very surprised.
Their only defence was that there was a covering player, but that covering player was irrelevant. Yeah. Because
Even Lampard in today's paper said maybe it was not a red card. But, I mean, although...
What interests me, and I haven't really researched this, but there was a time not so very long ago when this sort of thing happened all the time, and then FIFA quite specifically laid down a law saying, right, you can't go rescinding red cards. You can't, you know, it's the referee's decision on the pitch is final. So it's an interesting thing they've done here with
I don't imagine Lampard saw the incident because he was probably pointing and looking up in the sky at the time, but as is his wont these days. But it just seemed really odd. I can't help but feel that if it had been a centre half from Bolton or Sunderland or Middlesbrough, this would not have happened.
All right, it was a bad week though for the referees in general, though, not only Mark Halsey but also Alan Wiley with a bit of a mix up there with that Stoke Everton game.
Well, that's another just bizarre decision. There's no consistency here, which is the problem. David Moyes protested against a frankly bizarre and inexplicable refereeing decision.
When he was going to award a penalty for handball in the area, the linesman told him it wasn't in the area. It plainly was, and Moyes got sent to the stands. Yep. Now, he's since had a phone call, apparently, which possibly Alan Wiley has apologised to him in, but he still has to go before the FA.
He's still getting hauled before the coals, apparently for swearing at Wiley, which he insists he didn't do. But it should have either been a penalty or a free kick to Stoke. A penalty against Stoke or a free kick to Stoke. The referee fudged and gave a free kick to Everton in the wrong place. Mm. So it was just another weird decision. But they have this respect campaign going on, which they're big on. You have to respect referees. But you can't respect a decision like that. Respect has to be earned.
Mm. Wiley also incorrectly, as far as I could work out, disallowing a Stoke goal, which would have had quite a bearing on the result, that Ricardo Fuller.
Well, does anybody actually think the standard's getting worse, or it's just that now...
It's always been like that, hasn't it?
Yeah. It's just,
but referees are obviously going to make mistakes, managers are going to make mistakes, but the FA has to show consistency in when it's dishing out punishment. Danny Guthrie's thing, I mean, again, he pretty much assaulted
Craig Fagan.
Mm. He got sent off, he gets a three-match ban, and his ban isn't being increased any further.
Craig Fagan's going to be out for how long?
Presumably 3-4 months.
Right, he's got a broken leg. Okay, can I just ask? I'm not a medical person, but the only bone I've ever broken famously was
that toe in Malta,
and I know it gave me a lot of discomfort. But I'm guessing that a broken leg's even worse, Sean. Is that right?
I have never broken a leg, but right. I would imagine.
So I'm just stunned that Craig Fagan took 2 or 3 days to find out that his leg was broken. I mean, he was still walking around after the incident. Barry.
This similar thing happened to my dad a few years ago. Someone got upset.
Your dad, the vet?
My dad is a vet. Yep. He got kicked by a cow and was in severe pain.
Right.
And after about 3 or 4 days of taking painkillers, right, my mum insisted on driving him to the hospital,
right,
where he was x-rayed and discovered to have a broken shin.
Oh, wow. Okay. Was he behind the cow at the time?
Yeah, you would have to be. Cows can't kick forward.
Right. Yeah. What was he doing behind the cow?
I would imagine he was performing
looking
an internal examination,
right,
perhaps.
Yeah. Okay.
No, I think I've told this story in here before, actually.
It never loses its appeal, I think. The one about the blood transfusion is my favourite of your veterinary days. But anyway.
Baz has spent many, many time with his hand up at an animal's arse
sometimes
over the years.
I wouldn't put it up their arse, Sean. I think you need to... Your knowledge of bovine anatomy could do with some... brushing up.
Oh, dear.
Or somewhere else on the animal's anatomy.
Let's just say you need to be careful when you're shaking hands with me. You don't know where it's been.
Oh, dear. Other posts.
Sheep are the best, though.
Other posts. Michelino wants to know, in the light of the bankruptcy of XL, the bailing out of AIG and the all-round financial crisis, given the stadium situation at Liverpool, Man U being £800 million in debt, is that right? Apparently the Glazers themselves are significantly in hock too. The general wage situation with players commanding over £130,000 a week. Just how sustainable is this sport, Barry?
I have no idea.
Right, okay. It's an important question.
Well, over the years, people have talked about, you know, the game eating itself, the fact that, you know, fans can't continue to keep paying increased, you know, ticket prices, season ticket prices. You can't keep playing players more. And yet, you know, the TV money keeps coming in, which, you know, fuels everything.
Yeah.
You've got to think it will collapse at some point, but not yet.
While you've got the Arabs and stuff rolling in and et cetera, it does seem that...
Well, the economy's been on the up, basically, since the Premier League started, and this is the first time there's going to be a downturn. So if it's going to turn at any point, it'll be around now. It's going to be interesting to see the next TV deal as well, with Sky, how that's negotiated, whether they think they can afford to pay billions of pounds when perhaps people aren't going to be willing to fork out £40 a week for... A month for Sky subscriptions.
I'm quite interested, when Newcastle play Manchester United next, it'll effectively be the UK government against the US government. Because obviously, you know, our government's with Northern Rock and the US are now nationalised AIG.
I would imagine if AIG had to pull out of their short sponsorship deal, there'd be no end of companies queuing up to sponsor Manchester United, because as long as you've got tens of thousands of sheep who are prepared to come along and, you know, sing the praises of treacherous fiends like Cristiano Ronaldo.
Private Dick, who had a very, very...
He's quite public, Private Dick, this
Private
week,
Dick's
isn't he?
Been all over the post. He wants to plug the South Wales Derby, Cardiff-Swansea, which he calls the most acrimonious derby in Britain. He also weighs in on the whole controversy over the Rangers' Irish famine chant. This was brought up by Kevinio 8. Men Call Me Phil then published a kind of full text of the Irish famine chant, which is sung to the tune of Sloop John B and features the chorus, "The famine is over, why don't you go home?" Private Dick complains about their ideas of scansion, the meter is all over the place, and comes up with a rather brilliant alternative, which I could read it out and sing it. Shall I do that, or shall I just...
Yeah, go on, okay. I'd like to.
Where would the Fenians be without Scottish charity? We welcome them into our home with arms open wide. What thanks did we get? To our deep regret, the Lisbon Lions are our best ever side.
Well, I mean, there was an article about this in the paper during the week, and... Yeah. Needless to say, we got a load of whinging emails from Rangers fans going, "Oh, well, Celtic fans are just as bad."
Right.
And if there was an article about some song Celtic fans were singing, they'd be writing and going, "Oh, well, Rangers fans are just as bad." Just leave them to it. They're all clowns. The best thing I've ever heard about the famine was on Alan Partridge, where he said to somebody, you know, "Surely if Irish people could afford to emigrate during the famine, they could afford to eat in a modestly priced Chinese restaurant." So that for me sort of... That's good enough.
Excellent. So Private Dick also pointing out, Barry, this week, that someone's deleted your Wikipedia page. Ed Johnson, reason was article fails to assert why this person is notable. Lacks third-party verifiable preferences.
Barry was absolutely gutted.
Cruel world of showbiz, eh?
And Paul Doyle, Sean Ingle, James Richardson all deserve Wikipedia posts as well.
Sean Ingle?
Barry doesn't, yeah?
Apparently. I think it's only at a start.
Apparently I'm back now.
Ooh.
You see how closely Barry follows.
Can you create your own entry?
I felt like Marty McFly in Back to the Future, you know, where his picture is fading out of the photograph. It was pretty a low ebb in my... One of many low ebbs in my life. Being deleted from Wikipedia for not being noteworthy.
Right. Now, you stuck with us this long. Your reward, listeners, is the Premier League weekend in full after this. Big game, of course, Sunday afternoon. Chelsea at home to Manchester United. United haven't won at Stamford Bridge since April 2002. They're all around. They're rubbish in London, aren't they, Man United? They got beaten there by West Ham last year, remember?
Yeah, they got a 2-2 against Arsenal there.
Yeah, all right. Okay, Ronaldo's back, but Carrick's out. Was it 6 weeks, is it, with a broken foot?
Yeah.
Yeah. And no Vidic, of course, because he hasn't had his red card revoked.
Yes. Mm. Alex Ferguson was complaining about it, and he's going to get hauled before the FA Disciplinary Committee as well now.
Yeah, I'm just looking at a piece of paper to find out if Manchester United lose this game, which is entirely possible, how many
points?
They
will be 9 points behind.
Ooh, it's a lot.
It is a lot.
It's a lot of points.
I think they will lose.
Hmm. Tom?
I mean, they were struggling at the beginning of the last season as well, but I think the difference this time is that their rivals, you know, Chelsea are playing brilliantly. Liverpool, maybe not brilliantly, but certainly competently. So I think that's got to worry Alex Ferguson a bit more as well.
Which is why he was playing a bit, not a B team exactly, but he was certainly fielded a team which had one eye on the Premier League and the Champions League this week.
Yeah, Paul Doyle last night in his blog said that it was almost a scouting mission last night, and the big game was Sunday.
I don't think he'll have been too pleased with what he saw in his scouting mission either, because Evans was poor and Neville wasn't great either.
Well, yeah, Neville's still kind of out of it. He's only just coming back and he looked half awake.
I mean, I think it's too early to write United off. I think what is quite interesting, though, is the role of Carlos Queiroz. Together, you know, the first time with United, they, what was it, 2003-04, I think, they won the league, come back together again, they win obviously the league last year and they win the title. You wonder how the relationship with Ferguson and Phelan, how that's going. But I think once Ronaldo gets in, United can easily win 6-7 games in a row and put themselves back in the title picture.
All right, meantime, West Ham United against Newcastle United. Zola's debut on the Hammers bench.
And what an easy debut to have.
Mm.
Newcastle away, or Newcastle at home. Newcastle are hopeless in London at the best of times. They're a joke side at the moment. Players' morale is at rock bottom, and you can't see the result going any way other than West Ham's.
Any chance of them signing a new manager anytime soon, Newcastle?
Well, the latest talk, well, until last night, Kevin Keegan was a favourite again, but David O'Leary apparently is being considered as a short-term option, which is strange, really, because I think he did pretty well at Leeds. He finished, I think, fourth, third, fourth, fifth, which is certainly above par and certainly better than Terry Venables managed when he took over. But again, for Villa, you know, he was sixth in 2004, 10th in 2005, 16th in 2006. But like all managers, if you basically stay out of, you know, action long enough, you eventually get recycled again. And he's good friends with one of the Newcastle directors, and it may not be a surprise if he takes over.
When you say short term, like, what, they're just going
to
get
to the end, maybe to the end of the season and then sort of go from there, which is sort of what they did with Glenn Roeder before, you know, appointing him.
Or until they get taken over by somebody who brings in their own chap, because Ashley's now announced he wants to sell. And had this mysterious trip to the United Arab Emirates this week to sit in bars in case anybody came up with 480 million. As his rumoured asking price.
After saying he didn't want to make a profit out of the club, then actually doubling the price.
Have you changed your views? Because you were very sympathetic.
Raised the issue of whether...
No, you were sympathetic, Jimbo. You were,
I raised the issue.
It occurred to me just on the way in this morning where I read that he had been, himself and Dennis Wise had been hanging around bars. Ashley seems to spend a lot of his time in bars. Mm. And could this perhaps have anything to do with the complete farce that's going on in Newcastle?
I think it's a bit strange. If you want to meet sheikhs, surely, Muslim countries, surely you don't hang around bars.
Well, yeah, I don't know if that's the only place he hung around, but apparently the mission wasn't blessed with success. Alan Kerbishi, though, also apparently, I quote, on Newcastle's radar, which is fascinating, because if you couldn't get on with Damian Kaboli, you've got to wonder about how exactly his relationship with Dennis Wise would be. No, you're lost for words, aren't you,
Sean? He's Spurs, Damian Kaboli. So I don't know what his relationship is. Like.
Exactly. The bloke I'm thinking of is Gianluca Nani.
Although Kerbishi has long wanted to take over Spurs. When he was at Charlton, he lived quite near Spurs' training ground in Chigwell, and I think had made it known to a few people that he'd quite like to take over Spurs. Obviously, never did. Also, you used the word fascinating curvishly in the same sentence, which I think is the first time that's ever happened.
Now, speaking of Spurs, actually, they are at home to Wigan, and they've also got their UEFA Cup game against Wisla Krakow this evening. But they are in a bit of a crisis after that defeat at home to Aston Villa. After their worst start to a season in 34 years, say the record books. It's interesting that Martin Jol, of course, is off meanwhile at the top of the Bundesliga with Hamburg, whereas Ramos is going through pretty much the same situation that Jol went through last year and has come out and pretty much openly pointed the finger at Damian Comorli.
Well, what I find interesting, I was speaking to a few people at Spurs over the summer and they all suggested they thought Camilleri would go. And, you know, he was seen as someone that was losing influence. You look at Spurs and it's obvious they need a decent defensive midfielder. So Cora, who's been doing the job for, you know, 2-3 seasons now, you know, is an all right player. But he's not someone that, if you've got everyone else charging forward, that's going to fill that role. I mean, Gareth Bale, I think, looks out of his depth. I mean, he must be the only footballer ever to model his haircut on Dusty Springfield and Dusty in Memphis with his with his comb. And that's the most notable thing he's done, really, I think, this season.
I've never seen Dusty in Memphis.
No, is that an album?
No, it's an album. Oh, come
Sounds
on.
Like a porn movie.
It's one of the seminal 1960s.
Dusty does Memphis.
Look, in Memphis.
Right.
Son of a preacher
who's,
man.
Who's Memphis? Right, okay. Son of a preacher man, yeah.
I think as well, Ramos, like this morning, he's kind of said that the transfers have been mixed this summer. And the whole reason, well, one of the reasons he went to Spurs was he didn't think he had enough control at Sevilla, and yet he's pitched on up at Spurs, and it's exactly the same situation again.
If not worse, Tom, if not worse.
It's nice to see one of the suits carrying the can for a change.
Well, except he hasn't. I seem to remember fingers being pointed at Camoli this time last year after the Martin Jol debacle, and he's still there. Meanwhile, Liverpool will be facing the mighty arm of Rory Delap when they take on Stoke. What do you guys make? Have you Sean and Barry with your for a good odd?
Much longer Liverpool's luck can last. They haven't been playing well, but they've been getting results.
Surely they're going to win that one, though. Stoke, interestingly enough, have had 9 shots on goal and have scored 7 of them so far this season. I say that's interesting, but you may take
I was very impressed with Stoke against Everton. Delap's throw-in is a very potent weapon, and I don't see how Liverpool's defence would be better able to cope with it than anyone else's.
And they have scored since they came up. I thought that's where they were going to struggle. They were maybe pull off the odd clean sheet, but they just weren't going to get goals. But they have been getting goals, which is kind of encouraging for them as well.
Indeed so. Bolton are hosting Arsenal, and you would see this as an away win, would you?
Possibly a draw. But
I think Bolton have been pretty awful this season. I think maybe in the past they would have struggled Arsenal up there, but
same
this time.
Everton are at Hull. Yakubu scored 5 goals in his last 5 league games. Hard one to call this one, though, isn't it, though? Everton have had a mixed fortune so far this season, and Hull, I think, could easily get something in this game, couldn't they?
I think Everton are improving. I think Hull obviously had a brilliant start to the season, but you've got to think they will finish in the bottom 5 or 6. So, I think Everton may well.
The return of Tim Cahill.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. Man City.
If I could just interject
please
there.
Please do.
I can see how being a Hull fan might be quite aggrieved at that prediction, just purely because they've done so well. I can see no reason why they shouldn't beat Everton.
Man City Portsmouth, then, eh? Both involved in the UEFA Cup on Thursday night. Jermaine Defoe on fire, 11 goals in 16 since moving to the South Coast.
I thought Jermaine Defoe, far be it from me to toot my own horn, but I did say Jermaine Defoe would be an excellent signing for Portsmouth.
Like a Sunderland player.
Yeah. That could go either way, couldn't it?
Yeah. Good. More top analysis here on Football Weekly Extra. Hey, Tom, one here for you. West Brom against Aston Villa. This is your territory, mate.
Yeah.
Villa in the UEFA Cup tonight. Litex Lovech.
Which they should win.
Which also sounds like a porno movie.
It does, isn't it? So, will they score with Litex Lovech? That's the question.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they will. Okay. Yeah,
my in-depth knowledge of Bulgarian football.
Right, okay. But how do you see the derby going anyway?
West Brom, out of the three that came up, what you would have thought have done best, but they've actually struggled a little bit. I think Scott Carson's been very, very good for them, actually. But I think Villa will be too strong for West Brom. Should I 1-2 now, I think.
Right, okay. And finally, will Spurs' misery continue at home to Wigan and the incredible Amir Zaki?
Can see no reason why it shouldn't.
Spurs have got to come good at some point.
Do they?
Well, they've got the players. You look at the money they've spent. I mean, again, I think they have weaknesses.
Can we just splice in this conversation from last year and say, what's the bother?
Yeah.
Well, they did, though. They did improve. They ended up winning the Carling Cup. Immediately after that, they went on a 3-month holiday and hardly won a game in the Premier League. But
do you know they've only won 3 league games since February?
Absolutely, but yeah. they did have a spell once, between Ramos coming in and them winning the Carling Cup where they did okay, and I think
they did. But they don't have that team anymore. They've lost what? How many players have they lost since then? 9?
Yeah, but they've also brought in lots of players as well.
Yeah, at the last minute, who haven't played together.
Well, absolutely.
I mean, Palyuchenko has a half a season in Russia behind him already. Now he's going to have to play a full season in England. Just say, for example, and it's only speculation, but if he did his cruciate this weekend, Spurs would be absolutely screwed.
Modric, indeed, a fine example of that. He's already got off injured.
And he hadn't been pulling up any trees yet this season anyway. But, I mean, it's too early to judge him. But, I can see Spurs being in big trouble this season.
I'll wager 20 of my English pounds against 20 of Barry's English pounds. They finish on top half of the table.
Done.
Okay. I mean, it's hardly what they were looking for, a top-half finish under in their first full season under Juan de Ramos. But there you go. There you go. And Wigan, of course, looking like a very competent side. I can easily see them getting a draw there. That's my view. Anyway, Sean, before we go, you have an important announcement to make?
I often get emails from people asking where to post. And if you simply go to football.guardian.co.uk, you can respond to each show, or each weekly show. You can also play a fantasy football game as well, which I know a lot of you have asked about.
Right, I'm in there. And you can also play Pick the Score as well.
Absolutely.
You certainly can. You certainly can. Very good. We'll be back on Monday, and hopefully you'll be joining us for that. In the meantime, thank you. Barry, you won't be around, will you, on Monday?
I'm going to miss the next three pods.
We're
going to
miss you. And where will you be?
I'll be in an array of different places around England, Devon, Brighton.
Right, well, there you go.
Possibly Ireland.
A little national tour by Football Weekly's Barry Glendinning. Tom Lutz, look forward to seeing you again soon.
I'll see you later.
Thank you very much. And you, Sean Ingle. And you, the listeners, will be back on Monday. Thanks, producer Pete. See you all soon.